You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network and The Conversation with Adam Weber, lead pastor of Embrace Church and author of Love Has a Name.
Hey guys, you are tuning in to The Conversation. My name is Adam. As always, I am grateful that you are tuning in. A high five to every last one of you. I genuinely hope and pray that it has been a life-giving day, a life-giving week. On this end, I am grateful for so much. Like you, life is far from perfect. And sure, there's a handful of things that would be easy to focus on and worry about. Maybe even a few things that would be easy to focus on and complain about. And yet the genuine posture of my heart is one of thanksgiving and gratitude. The author of Hebrews encourages us to keep our eyes on Jesus. Keep your eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. I think this is powerful. It can also translate to say, keep your concentrated attention on Jesus. Your concentrated attention. Now, just to confess, I struggle to keep my concentrated attention on pretty much anything, including Jesus. Within any given day, there's so many things, good things, bad things, hard things, wonderful things that can so easily distract us. But my hope is, regardless of where you are, if it's been a great day, that you would keep your eyes on Jesus. If it's been a hard day, that you would keep your eyes on Jesus. If you're hurting, that you'd keep your eyes on Jesus. If you feel like you're lost right now, that you would keep your eyes on Jesus. Jesus, He leads us to everything we want, everything we need, everything that we are searching for. And it's because of Him that regardless of what our day has, regardless of what we are facing right now, that we can be filled with gratitude and thanksgiving because we've kept our eyes on Jesus. That's my quick word of encouragement in today's conversation. I sat down with a fascinating human being named Mark Clark. Mark is someone that has popped up on my radar so many different times. He's an author. He's a pastor. He pastors a church that he founded called Village Church up north in the great country of Canada. He shares a little bit about his story, how he came to Christ, how he ended up being a pastor. If you are interested in apologetics, like if you're interested in, how can we know that Jesus is who he says he is? How can we know and trust the Bible? You are going to want to hear this conversation. He's got a brand new book. It's come out. It's actually not come out yet. You can pre-order it right now. His book is called The Problem of Jesus. We'll have a link in the show notes, but the subtitle is Answering a Skeptic's Challenges to the Scandal of Jesus. Our conversation, again, was fascinating. We talk about preaching. We talk about his church. He answers the question, how can we know that Jesus existed? How can we know that Jesus is who he says he is? I wish this is a conversation that every single person could hear. I want you to sit back, relax, and as always, enjoy our conversation. Mark, just want to welcome you to the podcast today. So excited to sit down with you. Even more so, just excited to connect with you personally. You're someone that is continuing to pop up on my radar. And so I want to welcome you to the podcast today.
Well, thanks for having me, sir.
Yes, I'm envious of your office that is in your backyard. I'm not envious that you have to be in your office in your backyard.
No, exactly.
But I am. I'm envious of the office. So I just want to hop into your story. I shared this before. Yeah. You're somebody, again, that I've seen so many times, but I feel like I know so little about you. So jump in. Even where's hometown originally, how you got into ministry, what that all looked like.
Cool. Yeah. I grew up in Toronto, just outside of Toronto, in a little suburb out there. And, I grew up in a non-Christian home. And so, I'll give you an example. My dad named my brother Matthew, and he's 4 years older than me. And then, he was like, I don't want to spell his name with two T's because that would be like the Bible. And so they spelt my brother's name on his driver's license with one T. Okay. You can see it on his birth certificate. And then 4 years later, they had me and called me Mark. So clearly this guy had never picked up a Bible in his life. He was anti-God, anti-Christian, no Bible. I grew up no Bible, no church, no prayer, no nothing. Went away to summer camp, heard about Jesus a little bit as a kid, but didn't really do much with it. And then when I was like 17 in high school, this guy got radically saved and came and would just talk to me about Jesus every day. So finally I started, you know, in the midst of everything you do when you're 17 and you don't have Jesus in your life, the drugs, the partying, whatever, I picked up a Bible. And so I would sit outside my high school and just read the Bible and smoke a pack of cigarettes and just be confronted by Jesus. Like, Augustine says that the Bible is the face of God for us now. And it's like, it actually confronted me. Like, I met Jesus in there and I'm like, I want to follow. And so I started just telling people about it. I would sit outside my house, Adam, and like just tell people about Jesus at 1 o'clock in the morning. They're all hammered. I'd be baptizing them in Lake Ontario when I wasn't even baptized yet. This is just bad ecclesiology. So this was my life. And then finally someone convinced me to go to a church and I was like 19. And I went there and stayed because of the girls. and then a pastor came into my life and he just said, I think you should go into ministry. And I was like, what is ministry? And I had to pitch that idea to my parents, the idea that you would go to school to study the Bible. And they're like, yeah, there's no money in that. I'm like, for sure, there's not. But but anyway, so that's what I did. And God just got a hold of my life. And so I started pastoring and interning at different places. And then I started to really love scholarship. And so some of the teachers and professors came around me and said, I think you should go and like get into scholarship and academics and become a professor and all this. So I moved out. My wife and I got married. We shipped out from Toronto to Vancouver to go to Regent College, which is an internationally known seminary. And I was doing a master's degree in New Testament there on my way to do a PhD overseas. That was my heart, to go to Oxford or Cambridge and do a New Testament PhD. And we got here and did that master's and wrote a thesis on Romans 9-11. And then God said, I want you to plant a church. I was like, why would I? I'm living in Vancouver, Canada. Why would I plant a church? There's no Christians here. No one likes Jesus here. This is the most post-Christian.
Yeah, secular. This is not going to go well.
Yeah, yeah. So he's like, yeah, well, that's what you're going to do. I'm like, all right. So gave up the PhD dream, which is fine because I heard German's hard to learn anyways as a language. And planted a church here with 16 people in my house and just started telling people about Jesus and preaching through the Bible, just verse by verse. And everyone told me, Adam, that it wouldn't work, that like you can't tell Canadians that they're sinful and that they need Jesus and preach the Bible every single week. And I'm like, well, what am I going to do? And they're like, you just have to give soft messages like, hey, you're good, I'm sorry, you know, Canadian. And I'm like, yeah, no. So I would just get up and be like, your life's a disaster for an hour, but Jesus is the hero of the story. You're not. You're going to wreck your own life. And people started to meet Jesus. And then people would bring their friends. And then the church just started to explode.
Crazy.
And it was crazy. And over the course of a bunch of years, it's grown to a bunch of people and campuses. And we have campuses from Vancouver to Toronto now. Actually, we're planting a church in Toronto. And we have Calgary and Winnipeg and all these amazing, you know, baptized a bunch. Like it's been, the Holy Spirit has had his hand on this thing from the beginning. And that's not me because I'm a disaster. And so it's all Jesus doing a cool thing. So
that's so cool. I got a couple questions. The guy who shared Jesus with you originally, who was that?
His name is Chris. He still lives in Toronto from what I understand. Yeah, no, he was a guy. He was like kind of 6'3", ex-drug dealer, woman, like just crazy. Probably should have been out of high school 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
But just got real. Pentecostal guy.
Yeah.
And just Jesus totally just got a hold of his life, and he was an evangelist to the core. So that's all I understood. That's a, it took me going to church to understand people don't tell their friends about Jesus.
Isn't that the truth? Personal question, and don't feel like you need to answer.
Yeah.
Your folks, where are they at now?
Yeah. So my biological dad died when I was 15, the guy who named my brother.
Yeah.
He died when I was 15 of lung cancer. So that was a weird time. But my mom had divorced when I was about nine. And it was crazy because at that time, I guess because the psychological trauma of it, I developed Tourette syndrome and obsessive compulsive disorder out of their divorce. So I started doing random like tics and habits all the time. And I still have it today. And so, but it's not as bad as it, like I used to just swear. Okay. Just drop the F bomb, like F, like standing at a bus stop. All right. Like not the letter F, like the word. And like, and people would be
just
like,
just to clarify that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, well, that's a weird G. So it was like, I would sit at the bus stop and just F bomb. And so the one job you're never going to get when you randomly drop F bombs is a preacher. You know, it's not going to work. And so God redeems foolish, ridiculous things. You know, he talks about in 1 Corinthians 1.
Thank God.
And that's me. So, I kind of developed this thing. And then, so my mom had remarried when I was about 10 to an awesome guy who raised me. And he passed away in 2010. It was the second service, a village church, that he passed away. And, you know, she called me and it was like 6 a.m. and he passed. And then I got to preach and then fly out to Toronto and do his funeral. But it took our church through a kind of a galvanizing moment too. So anyway, so my mom's still alive. She's great. She raised me and sacrificed a lot, but yeah, from a faith perspective, they're not like, you know, following, you know, they wouldn't necessarily call themselves believers. So.
Yeah. Mark, thank you for sharing all that. And I feel like even it might sound like random information, but I feel like that gives us just even more a picture of who you are. So thanks for being willing to share that.
Of course,
part of me just still wishes that you drop the F-bomb. Everybody would think you were just trying to be edgy, whatever else. Like,
well, no, I do. It's just on the golf course.
Yeah, exactly. He's so edgy and current.
Swear sometimes.
Yeah. How old were you when you started the church, and the academic side of you, is that something that's impossible to miss in your preaching, and how has God used that? Share that.
We were 29 and I think it fuses in. I think the way people try to describe it is like, I have street smarts, but academics behind me. And so when you're listening to me, you can tell that you're getting the tip of the iceberg, and there's some stuff under the surface. There's footnotes, there's library. This guy has spent the time thinking about these things for 20 years, but he's not going to drag my neighbor into the library with him. He's going to come out of the library, you know, and say, here's what it has to do with your life. Here's how we got there. And here's what it has to do with you. So my preaching right now, for instance, I'm going through the Gospel of John, which we just did a series in Matthew a few years ago. It took 3.5 years to get through the Gospel of Matthew, right? Because I mean, I'm just getting excited about and I'm like, okay, let's stop right there. Immediately, this word is amazing, you know, whatever. So it's like, so we're going through John. So what I wanted, I have this big, the preaching style right now is I have this huge screen beside me.
And yeah.
I'm on an iPad and I just go through verse by verse and I start circling words in different colors and I start connecting them down and I just preach out of that because I want to not only tell people what to think, I want to tell them how to get there, how to think. So I think the academics is there to answer your question.
Yeah, that's fascinating. What a great way to approach it. And there's a richness that comes to that from that, that honestly, in many ways I'm envious in the coolest way possible. Cause I think more than ever, people want to know, like, have you actually thought through this on an academic level? Like, instead of just like hook, line, sinker, yep, cute baby Jesus, whatever else. Right. I think there's something to that, that honestly, in many ways, I feel like I'm beginning to live into more, even myself as a pastor. Mm. You don't have a crystal ball. Right. I feel like I know you're close with Carrie in many ways. Carrie's predicting this and that. I love Carrie. Carrie and Tony both are just awesome.
Carrie Newhoff. Oh yeah.
Awesome.
They're awesome. Both
do you,
awesome.
Do you have, because you are further along as far as post-Christian where you even live at, do you have any sense of what you feel like the church will look like in a year from right now? Or is there anything that you're just like, hey, American church, you might want to start doing this more or that more? And feel free, yeah. Again, I am far from knowing much of anything. So speak to me as if I'd know nothing.
Well, it's a fascinating question because, you know, you ask it a year ago and the trends are different than they are today.
Yeah.
I think the church has to figure out, you would know this and, you know, I wouldn't want to say anything controversial on your show, but I think the church has to figure out to not lose the net. I got a 14-year-old and a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old, right? So we got to think about what are these guys like, what's pushing them away from the church a bit? We got to, instead of burying our heads in the ground and going, well, that's you know, it's like, no, this is actually a thing. And so the fusion of, you know, politics and Christianity and the confusion that comes from that, I think is something we've got to figure out. and that's, you know, that's been the case forever. I mean, if you look back at the history of the church, when the church vies for power, it tends to die. I think I was listening to a thinker the other day, and he was talking about the fact that if you look at any other religion, those religions pretty well remain in the culture that they were born in. And so if you look at like Islam, it's most popular in the Middle East. If you look at Buddhism, if you look at Hinduism, you have these massive kind of religious places, right?
Yeah.
And they don't really change. I mean, they, you know, immigration and all that kind of spreads it, but Christianity always moved. It started in Palestine and then it went to Rome and then it went to Europe. Then it shifted to North America. And now it's moved from North America down to Latin America. 3,000 people come to Jesus a day, and Asia and Africa. That's what the face of Christianity is today. It ain't us.
Yep.
And so why does it do that? I think it's because when it vies for power, something about it dies because Christianity works best on the margins. It works best, right? And so it thrives in these places where people aren't like, hey, let's create an exoskeleton culture that chants the slogans of Christianity but dies and goes to hell. That's who hated that more than Jesus, right? You read Matthew 23, it's like, yeah, but don't worry, we have prayer in school. It's like, but none of these kids know Jesus. So it's a false sense of security that can be, I'm not saying it's bad, I'm just saying it can be dangerous in the end. And so I think that's partly what we've got to figure out. We've got to figure out that and some, you know, some race stuff. So, you know, these are the reasons that my kids are going to be like, dude, I'm out.
Like, yeah.
This is weird. You know, so, you know, and then I think, We gotta do that. You know, we were just talking about preaching styles. I think, you know, aside from preaching styles, I think the church has to be showing itself to be like Bible, 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 Jesus, 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 versus what we tend to do. And you know, this temptation as preachers, like, we got to come up with topics that people care about, and we exhaust ourselves, you know, trying to ride the unicycle around keeping everybody in the church. Dee, 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 dee. You know, hey, and it's like, at the end of the day, you know, my friends who, and I love that style too, and it's very effective, but my friends that preach like that often ask me why I do verse by verse versus that. And of course I stop and do topical, that I'm not bashing it, but I tell them, because man, when someone's life falls apart, right? When that kid gets hit by a car and the cancer diagnosis comes, what do I want to put steel in their spine? My entertaining sermons that have 5 points that all start with the letter G, or the text? The text is going to put steel in their spine when their life falls apart, you know? And that's what I want them to be holding on to versus having to come and get the hit from me to keep them going. And so I think we've got to figure out how to make that happen, and then make the church be the church, right? Ephesians 4, like, imagine, you know, all the people in my church were actually the evangelists versus bringing people to me so I could be the evangelist. Like, imagine people were coming to Jesus, not at 9 and 11 on a Sunday, but at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Wednesday in your living room. That's when the church explodes. So anyway, those are some things that we're
working on. Dude, oh my gosh. That's maybe the best response to that answer that I've maybe ever heard. That was, I'm not even kidding. You were stepping on toes a little bit on this. And I'm like, oh my gosh, is he? And,
oh, yeah,
but,
no,
but it
no,
was
no.
it was so that. It was okay. So good. I mean, genuinely, well, Mark, that's the worth the price of admission for anybody listening
I
right
appreciate
now.
It. Do you tend to rate people's answers live with them?
Yeah, I do, especially when they're that good. I'm like, it's no surprise to me that your church is growing. Just you and how God's wired you. There's something specific, and I'm being wholehearted in this, something uniquely wonderful about you. Like that was awesome. Your approach to scripture and preaching just fascinates me. We're going to be going through a series called First Samuel, where we got permission from Zondervan to be able to print out a whole bunch of copies of First Samuel. And we're just going through it and getting our people in it. And I'm pumped to think that most of our people have never probably read the book of 1 Samuel, and now they will. And just like you said, when the crap hits the fan, it's like, what in those moments, what do you hope people know?
You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network. And now, a message from a network supporter.
I want to switch to your book, which I'm holding in my hands, and Mark has never seen it, a physical copy of it. I felt like amazing. I like had sinned in front of you by holding your book before.
You must be a very powerful man, Adam.
Gosh.
I do not have a copy of my own book in my hands yet, but you know, Adam's got 10 sitting there holding the doors open.
Well, I have a copy, and I told him, you're not going to want to hear this. I've had a copy for quite some time too. Like it didn't come in the mail yesterday is what I'm saying. I legitimately, you're not going to want to hear this. I didn't say this to you. I had to go find it on my bookshelf. I mean, it was like
it's
on the shelf.
It's become part of your bookshelf.
It's already.
Wow, that is amazing.
No, so Mark, jump in. Amazing. What's the heart behind the book? Where'd it come from? Go for that.
Yeah. So it's called The Problem of Jesus. I wrote a book a few years ago called The Problem of God, which explored kind of the 9 or 10 big questions that people have against Christianity and trying to answer those.
Yes.
And this is a follow-up to that, which focuses on the person of Jesus, obviously. And it's written in a way that can capture both the skeptic and the believer, right? So it's you have the apologetic stuff, the academic, the history, like for people who are saying, oh, Jesus Christ never existed, for instance, which in Vancouver, you know, I don't know how it is everywhere where your listeners are, but in Vancouver, people actually make that argument all the time. So I go through the data and I say, no, every historian worth his salt, liberal, conservative, secular, whatever, anybody who just, you know, isn't crazy on the street actually, you know, thinks Jesus existed. And here's the, you know, here's the people outside of the Bible who actually wrote about him. And I quote them and I cite, you know, all of that. So, and then what was Jesus about? And then how do the gospels work? You know, were they just made up legends? And how does Matthew differ from Luke, different from Mark, different from John? And how to explain all of how they work with their agendas and their emphasis, different emphasis on Jesus and how he's the climax of the Israel story. And he gathers 12 and he goes through the water of the Red Sea and he goes out to 40 days and representing, you know, all of that fun stuff. And then I get into like, okay, discipleship. You know, what does that actually look like in the real modern world? And so it kind of pivots to like Christians, like how do you actually follow Jesus when, you know, Jesus is asking you to form you. And the only way you can come into his kingdom is by coming out of all the other kingdoms. So if you worship money and sex and power and family, and how do we get deformed out of those idols and reformed into the image of Jesus and what he's calling us to in the kingdom? So we go through all of that. And then loving God, you know, probably one of the more original chapters in the book is talking about how, you know, Jesus kind of gives this great commandment, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, strength. But we just kind of think that's cute. And we don't realize it's actually the difference between anybody who's wrestled with sin in their life or habits that kind of destroy their life, they'll know that the only way, and this is from Thomas Chalmers back in like the 1600s. He was a Scottish preacher. He's a great thinker. He wrote this sermon called, and I talk about it in the book, The Expulsive Power of a New Affection. And the concept is you can't just dislodge the heart of one idol. You actually have to replace an idol. So it's no good saying, I have a bad porn habit, I can't stop drinking, I can't stop whatever. That will never get you to stop. Yeah. You have to replace it with something you love more, something that trumps it. And that's why Jesus is saying, love God with your whole heart, soul, mind, and strength, because it's the only way to stop loving all the other things the world is trying to get you to love. And then we talk about miracles. Have a chapter on, is Jesus God and how does that work? Have a chapter on the parables and, of course, the death and resurrection. And so what I've tried to do is kind of take the academic world, the biblical scholar world, stories, anecdotes from my own life, but also fuse it together with like Malcolm Gladwell meets Jordan Peterson meets N.T. Wright meets Dallas Willard meets Star Wars and Lord of the Rings. I got everything in there. It's kind of like my preaching style where it's just all over the, I'm just taking everything I'm consuming and bringing it into the gospel. So anyway, so that's what the, that's what the book's about.
That's fascinating. Can I hop into one of the questions you ask? And you mentioned it earlier. Did Jesus really exist? Like just give us the Cliff Notes version of your response. And even like, and you mentioned a couple of different things, but even like what evidence is there for that? This is honestly, when I got it in the mail 7 months ago, I'm so sorry. When I saw this, I literally thought to myself, this is a book that's genuinely needed. I mean, my people are asking questions like this, even in conservative South Dakota, we're asking this question. Yeah. So, again, Cliff Notes version of, did Jesus really exist?
I mean, if you read N.T. Wright's book on Jesus, which is an 800-page book on the historical Jesus, he relegates this question to a sentence and says, no actual legit scholar at any level takes this question seriously. Like we know more about the historicity of Jesus than any other religious founder.
Yeah.
Not because the Bible tells us that. I mean, it does tell us that. And the Bible is a very trusted document. And there's a plethora of reasons for that, including archaeological digs. You know, there was 100 years ago, you would go to a, liberal university and they would tell you, the Gospel of John is not historical. And the reason is because in John chapter 5, it says that this man was healed near the pool of Siloam by these five colonnades. And those things don't exist. It's all made up.
Yep.
And you have a whole generation who just left and they're like, Bible's nothing. And then the archaeologists dug a little deeper and they found this pool with the colonnades exactly as John described it. And you have a whole generation of people who left their Bibles, and yet archaeology vindicated the Bible over and over and over again. You have this. Luke cites like 30 topical, geographical regions and islands and leaders, and all of them are accurate. So you have all this historicity backing up the Gospels themselves, written 20, 30 years after the life of Jesus, which in the scope of historical writings is crazy early.
Yes.
To the point where they actually cite people's, when you're reading the Bible and it's like, that guy who was the son of that guy, it ain't just saying that. He's saying, go ask him. He's still alive. These are eyewitnesses, right? I mean, it's crazy. So you have all the biblical stuff, but you have at least 8 to 12 writers outside of the Bible who are not friends of Christianity. They're actually antithetical toward Christianity. And they are writing about Jesus and they're talking about him as a historical person. And they're like, hey, look, this is what happened with this guy. And here's what people thought of him. They thought he was a magician. He led Israel astray. Pontius Pilate put him on trial. He died on, around this time on a crucifix, and they're not writing it like, hey, everybody, I hope you believe in this mythology I'm creating. They're like, this just happened. And of course, and then you get like the testimony of the church that's like, everyone's getting persecuted and tortured and dying for this thing that they would have created. No one dies for a lie they made up. We don't sit around and go, oh, let's make a religion around Adam. And then everyone starts pulling our fingernails off and we're probably going, okay, we made it up. We're joking. All of these guys and their families die horrible deaths. And yet they go, I saw the resurrected Jesus. This guy is, you know, so there's all kinds of historical reasons. So that's why N.T. Wright relegates it to a sentence and goes, hey, on this 800 page book, I'm not even going to deal with this question because it's not even a question. Here's a footnote. I went, okay, let's give a few pages at least on it. And so I try to resource people well so they can go, no, he actually did exist. And now what was he about?
So good. Again, the book is called The Problem of Jesus by Mark Clark. We'll have a link in the show notes. Absolutely go get this book. Last question I have for you, Mark.
Yes.
Who are great thinkers that you, if someone's just like, this is their vein, like this is what they're curious about. Who are thinkers right now, current thinkers that are alive, that you're just like, I would follow this person, her, him, this. Who, do you have those types of people that you're like, follow these people if this is something you're curious? Or who are you learning from, even if they're no names?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to read a kind of a wide variety of stuff. You know, over 20 years, I've read a lot of historical Jesus stuff, right?
Yeah.
So James Dunn, N.T. Wright, you'll see a lot of those guys in there. John Meyer wrote a series called A Marginal Jew, which is, you know, collectively this big. That's for your listeners big. You have great writers like Craig Keener, C.S. Lewis, of course. I mean, he's not still alive,
yep,
but his writings on Christianity in general and the implication of Jesus have been very impactful for me. So those are some names. From an apologetic standpoint, Nancy Piercy, from a Christian life, you know, Dallas Willard, Eugene Peter, you know, all of these thinkers, you know, but from a cultural standpoint, like taking the whole concept of let's take Jesus into the post-Christian culture, I think learning from cultural critics, guys like Mark Sayers or Malcolm Gladwell, who's not a Christian, but man, he's talking about how to create, you know, social, how do you create ideas that spread, basically, which is what our job is.
Yeah.
Let's take Jesus and spread the idea. How do you do that to a culture at large? So anyway, those are some people I'm learning from right now.
Mark, again, a huge blessing to have you on today. Thanks for being faithful to put the words down on the page, because I have no doubt it's going to encourage so many. So again, just want to thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hey guys, this is Kate Warman, and I am the host of the Heart of Dating podcast here on the Converge Podcast Network. And I want to tell you about something super exciting. My first book ever, Thank You for Rejecting Me, Transform Pain into Purpose and Learn to Fight for Yourself, comes out on February 16th. Have you ever been through a massively painful rejection, whether from a family member, a friend, or someone you were dating? Well, if you don't want rejection to have the last say in your life anymore, I want to encourage you to visit thankyouforrejectingme.com and join me as you face your biggest rejections in life with courage and strength.
Thanks for listening to The Conversation with Adam Weber. This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network. You can find more from Adam Weber on Instagram and Twitter and at adamweber.com.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.